All right. Thank you guys for joining us so much. Great, great show planned. And as we tipped off in the lead in here, joined by, again, I think our first guest to the show and been with us a couple times and getting him back. And we were just joking off air about how we need to start planning our investment strategies around whenever he joins us, because it always seems to come at big market junctures. So without further ado, I want to introduce Raoul Paul, the founder of Real Vision, one of our favorite sources of research here, and you can find that at realvision.com. Also the founder and writer of the Global Macro Investor, a institutional research paper that's widespread throughout Wall Street, and a former hedge fund manager for Goldman Sachs. Raoul, thanks so much for joining us today.
Always great to be here.
Now, you guys came out. The thing that prompted me to want to get you back on is we're up here sounding the alarm in the Pacific Northwest, trying to warn people about the inevitability built into current market structures, and I think the errors in the way that people are currently positioned, especially people close to retirement, people in retirement. And right on cue, you guys have been running a two-week special now on the pending retirement crisis. And I want to start off by saying, A, you've released this free of charge, correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of it's free of charge. And if not, it's just a dollar to sign up for Real Vision right now. So there's no excuse not to get access. The information's far too important to put any kind of paywall of any meaningful sort in front of people. So just go to the website, realvision.com, pay a dollar, you get to... I think 30 days right now to just go and have a look at the content. If it's not for you, that doesn't matter, but at least you can learn from some of the stuff we put out, which is really important.
And we've been subscribers now for, I want to say about three or four years. And I think it is by far the cheapest, most valuable content out there. Everybody can afford it. We're not talking about a big spend here. So go get at least the 30-day free trial just to watch the retirement crisis special. And these are not shills talking. These are experienced guys. Most of them played it perfectly throughout the financial crisis in 08, 09. And they're presenting numbers and facts. You're probably not going to hear them from your local Edward Jones financial advisor, but you didn't hear about 08, 09 from them either. And just educate yourself. So, Raoul, I will back away now. I want you to kind of, you know, give us a summarized version. Obviously, they're going to glean a lot more information from watching the videos. But what prompted this, and what are some key points that you want people to take away from these videos?
Okay, it's going to be a bit of a monologue now, but there's a lot to understand. It's basically the largest group of people in all history, the baby boom generation, born after 1945, have all done rational things, but all together. So what you create is individual rational decisions that creates the madness of crowds. So if you remember back when everybody turned kind of early 20s in the 70s, what happened was every one of these baby boomers went out and bought their first house, their first car, their first suit, their first tie, their first table, their first chair, everything. And that incremental consumption with no offsetting other generation because of the war generation, the number of people that had died and the over generation meant that demand exploded and America exploded as an economy. And that demand brought about inflation. So as by the time we got to 1980 and these people were starting to turn 30 years old, 35 years old, they got out of the strongest marginal spending and now we're in the point of saving. At that point in their lives, they were given a gift of an opportunity. That was interest rates at 18% and PE ratios of equity markets at about 6 or 7. So they had a huge opportunity to accumulate wealth at very good levels, and they did. So the right thing to do was put it into your pension, and corporations were piling money into pensions. Now, the problem is interest rates were so high that the projections for two things, one, how long people live for, and secondly, what the interest rate would be when people retired, were both wrong. So over the 90s and 80s, people piled money into their corporate pension. Then when the defined benefit pension scheme started getting stopped because corporations realized they may not be able to pay the actual amounts of money that people would promised, They then got people into 401ks. So people piled more and more money into the market. And by 2000, they were at peak equity allocation and the market collapsed. That scared people off, but people were still in their 40s at this point and coming into their 50s. So that group of people then decided, okay, the next thing to do to try and get to their retirement savings end goal was to buy property. So bit by bit, with interest rates so low at almost zero after 2000, people started buying property. And as the Federal Reserve raised rates and the property market got excessive, eventually that collapsed too, and that led us into 2008, and the equity market fell with it. So that twin trouble essentially put all of these people on the back foot. Interest rates then went to zero and stayed there, in essence. So that meant that if, when you first thought about retiring and you're in your 30s and interest rates were at 10%, you needed $1 million and you could have 100 grand a year. Now, $1 million gets you no grand a year. You basically have to eat into your capital. So this has meant that every pension fund around the world, including people's own private 401k, their mutual funds, their pension funds, and their defined benefit corporate pension plans, and their state pension funds are all underfunded. So they don't have enough money to pay the promises for retirement. So cut to the last bubble. So this is the bubble coming from 2012 onwards, was really the understanding that all of these people are about to retire in the next 10 years, because the average baby boomer is now 65 years old or 66 years old at retirement age, that the system had to take more risk to try and make back the losses or the hole in the promises. So they piled into equities and particularly piled into credit, where there was a little extra return to be had. They piled into private equity, venture capital, and hedge funds. So there was a huge speculative rush. Well, it wasn't speculation so much as driven by the pension funds. It wasn't the individuals who were taking excessive risk. It was the people who were running money for them because they were desperate to try and get to the number. Meanwhile, interest rates continued to fall. So therefore, the funding hole got bigger and bigger. So now here we are at the cusp of the next recession, and we have a group of 66-year-olds with a maximum allocation to equities, a maximum allocation to corporate credit, an all-time record valuation in both asset classes, and a recession on the horizon, which could wipe 50% off the value of equities. Now, the difference to this happening when you're 65 versus happening when you're 45 is you don't get to buy the dip because you are probably looking to retire. So in which case, your final pool of money is the pool of money you get to live on for the rest of your life. And you don't know how long you're going to live for. So that means you never know how much money you need. So we've created a very, very complex and problematic situation where people are going to have to crystallize losses into a falling market if we get this recession, which I think is you know, clear and present danger. Even if it's not this time around, whenever it comes in a year or 2 years' time, people have got far too much risk to deal with, and they risk wiping out their savings. So what we did on Real Vision is we spoke to everybody from the best pension fund managers of all time through to people who understand the market structure and how people are positioned, and also macroeconomics guys and demographers talking about this situation from different angles so people can truly understand what it is. We then finished it off with a documentary that told the story of individuals, how teachers and firemen and people like that were being taken advantage of by Wall Street and their advisors. So that's what it's all about. It's my concern that somebody who's been in this market for 30 years and has made a good living out of it, owe it to others to tell them that they are running too much risk and the people advising them don't have their best interests at heart.
I could not agree with you more. And then from our side of the table, you know, sitting down and talking to and dealing with retail investors on a day-to-day basis, there are two things that we're constantly seeing. And my mother-in-law falls into this space as well. She recently retired, moved her assets over to us. And we're going through her portfolio. Now, she's had this portfolio for 13 years. So, you know, it's not like we're cherry-picking data here. And it's your typical 60-40, right? The typical stock bond allocation for retirement. And on the financial planning software that she used when she selected that portfolio 13 years ago, her expected annual rates of return off historical average, which is at this point, I think, are useless. She was expecting a 7.5 to 8% annualized return, right? Sound good. It was going to get her to retirement goal. After 13 years, her actual average was 5.01%. So one of the things that we're frustrated by is it's not like guys like you are sounding the alarm about what could happen. This is already happening, and it's happening in the longest bull market of all time, and people are still underperforming. And now you got guys like Jeremy Siegel coming out and saying you need to move to 80% stocks and 20% bonds because 60-40 is dead. And I'm sitting there going, okay, now we're going to increase risk exposure at the height of the longest bull market in U.S. history?
And when you're at retirement age. Right. Why would you do that to people?
I don't know. I'm absolutely speechless by it. Now, the other side of it that you I think you guys have done such an awesome job of highlighting, and it's something we've been pounding the table on, is, guys, bonds aren't going to save you. And do you want to hit on bonds in particular? Because I love the work you guys have done. What is the issue we've got with bonds outside of the abnormally low yields?
Well, I don't have issue with government bonds,
right,
per se, because I think they will appreciate in price, and I think yields will go to zero, so you'll make some price gains. The issue is corporate bonds. So corporate bonds, the amount of corporate issuance of debt is astonishing. It's the largest credit bubble of all outstanding now. So if we think we had the housing bubble and then before that was the stock market bubble, this one is the corporate debt bubble, really. And what we've got is a situation that I'm very uncomfortable with, is due to a tax loophole, corporations would rather issue debt and buy back their shares than invest in fixed capital or expansion. And then they buy, then the management team give themselves stock options, pat themselves on the back as they drive their share price higher and get richer themselves, causing this rich-poor divide that we're so cognizant of these days. Now, the issue is with that is it is driven, they've become now the only buyer of equities. So if I break down all of the flow of equities, because of the baby boomers retiring, there is an ongoing exodus out of the stock market. Foreigners have been small investors, but generally speaking, almost everybody is a net seller of equities. There is a switch going on for those remain in the market into index funds, which is causing a certain number of companies to outperform everything else. But these corporations are by far the largest issue here. Now, what drives their buying is their cash flows and their margins. So when they have high margins, which they've got supernormal profits right now, because as we know, capital has made all the money and labor's made none, so they've made excess profits. So they buy back their shares. The problem is you go into recession, then profits go to zero or negative. If profits go negative, they stop buying back their shares. So as you go into recession, you have this weird situation where the biggest buyer of stocks in the world disappears. So that means there's no buyer of equities because there's no natural bid. There's no 55-year-old baby boomer any longer saving for retirement. There's a bunch of 65-year-olds desperately trying to get out of the market and they got to retire them. On the flip side of the equation, these corporations have issued so much debt that their credit ratings have been downgraded and downgraded. And so now at this, what's known as the triple B level, which is the lowest of all investment grades, there's a bunch of really massive firms, about $3 trillion of debt sitting on the edge of this cliff that could get downgraded to junk bonds. If that happens, then the buyers of these bonds, the pension funds, aren't allowed to buy them. So you have a credit issue forming. The other issue here is, who is the buyer of the bonds now? Who are these corporations selling them to? They're selling them to all of your pensions. So your pension manager is buying these bonds that have this credit risk within them. But more importantly, the money that's coming into the bond market is actually coming from states like Illinois and California and New Jersey, which are underfunded. They raise taxes to try and fill in the holes in the pension schemes that they've got. And that extra money flows into the credit market, which is these bonds. And again, tax receipts are driven by the business cycle. The moment the business cycle turns negative, which I think is happening, then the buyer of corporate debt disappears as well, because there's no new inflows into these pension funds. So we could be walking into a situation where the world's biggest buyer of equities and the world's biggest buyers of credit leave the market at the same time. And that really worries me.
Yeah, I'd say it should be worrying everybody. And I, you know, and then all of this in the backdrop of recognizing what central banks have done over the, you know, over the last 10 years, recognizing that your cost of living most likely isn't going to be headed down, right? So the productivity or the, you know, the income you're going to need off that nest egg is going to increase. And, you know, whether it's a Bernie Sanders getting elected, right? I mean, this income need is going up at some point due to inflation or anything else. Would you agree?
Yes, and I think inflation is bifurcated, meaning there's two types of inflation here. One is your fixed cost inflation, healthcare, and your, you know, your general fixed costs. I don't think, you know, food prices have been relatively okay. Some areas are seeing huge deflation. So I think we'll see huge deflation in some areas because you're taking this huge buying population out of the market as the baby boomers retire. But they have needs in certain things too. You know, and so that creates a problem where their fixed costs rise and their variable costs fall, but really they live off fixed costs. So that's problematic. The problematic is the dollar right now is very strong. At some point, I think in the next 3 years, the dollar will become much weaker and purchasing power globally will decrease again. So I think there's a real issue. So, you know, I think people need to make intelligent decisions about where they live and how they live. I think moving in with kids and sharing the cost of living and all living together in a larger premises where one of the grandparents can actually work part-time and add to the income. They pull their savings. So then you've got kind of, you know, babysitters on hand and people to help. That old model that survived back in the 50s, I think is going to come back in because people can't afford to do anything else. I also think people will move south to warmer states and warmer, cheaper states, or even cross borders into places like Mexico, Costa Rica, etc. We've seen it in Europe where Northern Europe is basically moving south into Spain, Southern France, where it's much, much cheaper to live. And the quality of life is much higher.
We are seeing that right now. Seattle is a microcosm of that dynamic that you're talking about. One of the hottest real estate markets over the entire cycle has been the greater Seattle area. And we are seeing a migration of capital of these. Many of my clients are doing this. They're cashing in their homes in the Seattle area, and they're moving as much as, you know, 20, 30, 40 miles down the I-5 corridor to where real estate is cheaper. And we're already starting to see real estate markets around Seattle pick up and Seattle stagnate. The other thing, one of the quickest growing real estate markets in the country right now is Phoenix. I mean, you're starting to see that, you know, those inroads being made. It's a fascinating thing because it's a bit of a reversal of what we've seen. So now one thing we are doing, interestingly enough, you guys recently ran a interview with a guy that is specializing in using annuities and retirement planning. Now, we do it a little bit differently, but we've used something called a no-fee, no-cap, fixed-indexed annuity as a bond replacement for a lot of our clients, or a bond supplement. And the way it works is you're insured against loss with no fee, and you get 50 to 60% of the upside in the index that you choose. So you're participating about halfway, you know, getting half that market upside, and you're insured against loss in the downside, and that resets annually. Traditionally, these things are cranking out 5.5% to 6.5%, you know, type gains pretty uniformly through different market cycles. Feel free to speak to that, but also what are things that investors should be looking at this moment? What kind of steps should people approaching retirement be taking right now?
Yes. I mean, look, the annuity market's difficult because, rates are much lower, but again, it's all about your expectations. If you can manage your expectations lower, then it's going to make a huge difference to your quality of life. I mean, I've got a friend of mine. She works for an oil services company down in Houston. And she should be retiring, but she won't because she wants to eke the last few dollars out of her pension. And her and her husband have just sold their house, which was the right thing to do, so they have some flexibility. The problem is she desperately wants to reinvest it back in the market so she can get to her magic number without realizing she's risking everything.
Right.
And I kind of beg her on a daily basis not to do this. But she's so got that number in her head. I think the biggest single dial move that anybody can have is change your number and then solve for that.
Yeah.
And don't do it the other way around.
Yes, I am. We're preaching from the same book here. The other thing too is people need to understand that there are alternatives out there. You know, these fixed index products. This isn't why I got into the business. I'm a stock guy. I'm a markets guy. I'm a macro nerd, and that's what I like. But you know, we had a year like last year where the S&P goes through the roof. And we had these fixed index products knocking out 15% to 19% gains with no fee and an insurance against loss. You know, I'm not trying to plug product here. I'm just saying, get creative, start focusing on capital preservation and work from there. And like you said, dial that number back. I think that is something that, and it's tough to do, right? People see these markets ripping in their face going up, and it's what we've deemed the Buzz Lightyear market, right? To infinity and beyond. And now all of a sudden, we get a little what I think may be a Minsky moment here forming in the background, and little fears coming into the market. So unless you have anything, I don't want to move on too quickly from this because I think it's important, valuable information that people need to get. But if we would move into what is currently happening right now. And, you know, as we speak, markets are getting rocked. What kind of kick us off? What are you seeing going on? What do you think's happening? Do you think this is the beginning of a global downturn?
So I think the global downturn started a long time ago. I think the warning signs were in 2016, 15, 14, when the dollar screamed higher and global growth collapsed and the oil price collapsed. It then recovered because the Chinese managed to stimulate, the Fed managed to stimulate, and everything was just about okay, and the Europeans stimulated. So it was just about okay, but the dollar was this driving factor that was a big global wrecking ball. So then, after that, the Fed thought, it's the all clear, let's start raising rates. They were the only central bank to do so, and they started raising rates relatively quickly. Now, the rate of change of rate increases was the largest in all recorded history. Even though rates were still low optically, the rate of change was very high. So if you'd taken out any leverage at lower levels, that your interest payments have gone up doubled or tripled. And you know, it was extraordinary. And that suddenly slowed down the economy quickly and the global economy, and the dollar shot higher because rates were too tight in the US. And then the global economy started creaking at the seams, and we saw one central bank after the other move to easing, and we saw global trade volumes starting to turn lower. Then came the trade tariffs. The trade tariffs was the real knock that drove what was a tricky situation to something much more negative, and many countries around the world started to see negative GDP growth, and world trade went negative, which is a terrible, terrible sign. And meanwhile, the dollar continued higher. So there we have this problem where global growth was slowing down, and it was slowing down into Christmas. And my view was we were going to go into recession anyway this year, and it has been that view for a while. I thought we might have got there last year, saved in the last quarter. The outcome now is the coronavirus. The coronavirus was the black swan that the world did not need. So if the world was already starved of dollars, starved of world trade, and slightly nervous, and there wasn't enough stimulus around, we've now got a situation where the coronavirus has stopped trade dead, particularly in Asia, particularly centered around China, but then South Korea too. Nobody is going to fly into South Korea, and that creates a problem. South Koreans aren't allowed to fly anywhere else. The Chinese can't fly around very easily. They can't fly around internally, and they can't fly around externally. So the largest tourism numbers on Earth and travel numbers on Earth have ground to a halt. The oil price starts collapsing, but all the factories close down as well because nobody will go to work. So then you've got a supply and a demand shock where nobody's spending and nobody's working. So you've got a huge problem, and that's in China, and that's not in the global numbers yet, and you'll start to see it coming into the numbers in March. So that's one problem. But now it's spread. Now it's spreading to Europe. Italy is accelerating its rate of viruses. So Italy gets something like 60 million tourists a year. Well, I'm sorry, but most people are not going to go to Italy if they can avoid it, even though, you know, it's only in certain clusters. Now, again, the coronavirus is not the most deadly virus. It's not the worst thing. It's not like Ebola, but its rate of transmission is extremely high that it can go pandemic. Well, it is pretty much pandemic now. So that means that everybody is going to affect their behavior. Do I travel? Do I travel to big cities? Do I go to sports games? So football games in Europe have been cancelled. You know, it's only a matter of time before they start cancelling music festivals and other large events. They've already started cancelling them in Italy. So it's spreading. It's now spreading into Spain. It's spread from Iran. It's spreading over the Middle East. So it's all over the place, and it's early days. If we remember how it went from China, it went slowly to very quickly. That we've seen in South Korea, and it should continue to expand at that rate. The next phase is the US. The US doesn't really do any testing. Because of some weird regulations, they have not been testing people. So they don't know its prevalence in the US or how fast it's spreading. And this is a dangerous situation. This is what the markets are starting to pick up. This is why they faded the Trump conference, because people were actually after answers. And the answer was, we don't need to do anything. The probability of the US not having coronavirus spreading is extremely low indeed. Now, it could be a fortuitous turn of events that it doesn't happen. The probability is not that. So by the time the US picks up their game and starts testing for coronavirus, probably later in March into April, we're going to see something that's going to shock people. So I'm extremely concerned that what we're seeing in the markets now is the markets are starting to price in, oh my God, the Fed needs to cut rates. This is a problem. Global trade is slowing down. This makes me nervous. Is going to go from this makes me nervous to this makes me terrified. And as the US and Europe starts shutting down its ability to trade and move around the country, we have a huge, huge problem. Now, there are no certainties in this. We're trying to extract probabilities about something we don't know. We don't know the true numbers of this virus spread. We don't know really what it means. We don't know the recovery rates versus death rates. We just don't know anything. But what I do know is human behavior, government behavior, and central bank behavior. Human behavior is to, at the margin, change your behavior. So that means you don't want to buy as many stocks. You don't want to travel as much. You want to change what you do. That alone causes economic impacts. That's how you cause a recession. Secondly, the governments. Governments have no choice but to overreact. The US is underreacting. And if this goes the way I think it's going to do, this is going to cost Trump his presidency. Because you cannot do nothing and be wrong. Because if you're wrong, you're out. So that's why the outsized impacts in places like Singapore, Hong Kong, obviously China, South Korea, they've been really all over it because it is a huge political hot potato.
Well,
so I think that is a problem.
Yeah.
And the final thing, sorry, the final part of this is the central bank reaction function. We know what they do. Faced with a falling market, and weakening confidence, they're going to cut. And they'll probably do an emergency cut, and they'll probably cut again. So I think it's probably 100 basis points of cuts to come out of the Fed.
Yeah, I would agree. Speaking of which, about 25, 30 minutes before you got on the line, news was breaking here that a high school within about 40, 35, 40 minutes of where we're recording was closed due to fears over the coronavirus. So, you know, and they're saying it's mostly precautionary. News is still feeding out, but I brought up something earlier, and I was.
And also, sorry, somebody's just sent me a Bloomberg note saying 33 tests positive for coronavirus in California state government.
Yeah. So now, taking a little bit of a step back, this is why one of the things I was excited to talk to you about is, you know, for years now, us more price-sensitive buyers, more of us traditional investors, have been mocked and laughed at, that valuations no longer matter because, you know, low rates justify it. Doesn't this kind of set up, and in no way am I trying to rub salt in the wounds or say we were, you know, just making an observation here, that this has the setup to be sort of the perfect Minsky moment, meaning that, you know, the analogy I've used, and I know you've heard it, but you know, you got two guys standing on the side of the road and one's balancing a pencil on his finger and a truck drives by and pencil falls off and One guy says to the other, hey, why did that happen? And, you know, the guy says, well, because the truck drove by. And he goes, no, because the pencil was unstable to begin with. And in, you know, who would have thought that a virus could do this? But it isn't it really exposing the largesse and the excess of the last decade? And you know, the, that is showing how fragile this central bank inflated bubble really is?
Yes. Yes. Given a robust market in a robust economy without speculative excess, you could get through with less panic. Greed turns to fear very quickly. Mm. They're equal and opposite. So the manifestation of this is fear. And so I think, yes, it's very much to do with the human behavioral aspect and where people think they are. Also, if you think about it, in I'm an options guy at heart, in option terms, all these baby boomers are short the downside. So they basically have to hedge, i.e. exit all their positions into a falling market if they think that this is going to affect their retirement savings. Now, we're not there yet with the market. This is more, you know, some of the excess has been taken out, plus a lot of the short volatility positions. But the next phase, if I think I'm right, and we kind of form the right-hand shoulders of a head and shoulders top in the S&P, and we break lower based on the coronavirus in the US, I think we'll see real and meaningful and long-term selling. And the problem is, it's come up a long way and it can go down a long way because there's no liquidity in this market. The liquidity has just all been in index funds, because if you think of the role of passive of active investors, it's to look for cheap opportunities, to basically arbitrage price opportunities over the longer term. Now, when most of those guys have been taken out and shot one by one, there's less of them. So it means that there is almost no liquidity, and none of those guys are active at index level. So who is the buyer of this index product? Who's the buyer of Apple shares? I don't know. I don't know. Now, it doesn't make Apple a bad company, but it's a great company 50% lower down or 70% lower down. So that's what we have to be very, very careful of.
But one other thing I wanted to hit too, and I think that this is, I you know, a couple of buddies of mine, we've been going back and forth all morning. And the question is, and I understand the question because, you know, I've still got burn fingers on my hands from getting a little too aggressive to the short side during some of these, you know, scares and panics that we've had that proved to be, you know, pretty transient over the last 10 years. And so being careful, and everybody's like saying, well, you know, is this going to be another bottom? Is this going to be another V-shaped bounce and all that kind of stuff? I think one of the most important things, and again, I'll throw this to you in the form of a question, but I think one of the most important things people need to realize is that this market isn't doing this in anticipation of some type of threat, right? Damage is currently being done. I've got a good, an ex-colleague of mine who is now a logistics manager at one of the big tech firms locally. I've recently tweeted about it, but had to remove the tweet because he got pretty nervous about how viral it was going. But he and I spent about an hour on the phone last week. And he said to me, he goes, Zach, it's not what's going to happen. He goes, our entire supply chain is frozen. He goes, nothing is happening. And I don't think people realize there is economic damage that has been done, that is being done currently. And every day this goes on, it's getting worse, is it not?
Correct. And people can't see it yet because it's not in the numbers yet. So it will come into the numbers in March. And I think March is going to shut people. And if I'm right and it spreads to Europe, it's only going to roll from China to Europe and then into the US. So we have a rolling series of shocks. And I did a tweet about this where I likened it to when Iceland first went and then the UK banks went. And it's not about the banking system here. What it's talking about is a rolling series of shocks that doesn't go away. One spreads to the other. In this case, it's a virus and it's panic. And then it's government response. So those things are rolling, I think. And I think that is the outcome here. So as opposed to it being a one-quarter China demand shock, it's probably a 5-6 month China demand shock overlapping with another starting 2 months later European demand shock, starting another 2 months later with a US demand shock. That is a horrific situation.
Now, I would be remiss if we didn't have this conversation, because this is, I can't think of a better person to ask this question to. But one of the things that I know you've been watching, because I've gotten a lot of my tips from you and Real Vision on this, but one of the most, you know, probably the gold standard of excess of this cycle is the Chinese government, Chinese economy itself. When you look at the structure of their economy and you look at how foreign reserves, forex reserves have dropped over the last couple of years, you add in the impact of the tariffs, now coronavirus, is this whole Chinese deval that Kyle Bass and so many others have been speculating about for years, do you think that could be a result of this? I've been shocked at how little talk about this I have heard, because that to me is sort of the, I don't know, that could end up being a Lehman type moment for this market where everybody realizes, holy smokes, where are we at? And is that misguided on my part, or do you think that could be a knock-on effect here?
I'm burnt from trying to make the prediction about the Chinese currency, but look, it is another tail risk that's embedded within this situation. You're dead right. The situation is almost untenable for the Chinese in a situation where world trade has stopped. There's no dollars for them. So if you're starving them of dollars, you're starving them of the oxygen that they need to service their currency where it is. And if that goes away, then it cannot survive. If I look at the long-term charts of currencies, they've all got a Chinese deval written all over them. So my belief is yes, but I just don't know.
Yeah, a lot of balls in the air currently, and it'll be interesting to see the way this plays out. So let's move on.
You know, and the simple thing is the argument I've been making for a long time is it doesn't matter. Just own U.S. treasuries, because they will go up massively in a situation where the Chinese devalue. If the stock market crashes and the Chinese don't devalue, treasuries will go up. If the Fed cut interest rates, treasuries will go up. If the virus spreads to the US, treasuries will go up. If world trade slows down and it doesn't hit the US, treasuries will go up. So there's no better trade on earth than interest rates.
You're sitting there talking to a guy right now. I think firm wide we're about 35% U.S. Treasuries right now, and pulled that trigger. Well, we've been adding to it over the last 4 or 5 months. Now you've taken a lot of flack for it. You really got bulled up on Treasuries. If I remember correctly, I want to say the 10-year was still above 3%. Have you been riding this thing that entire time?
Yeah. And the Eurodollar market. So in and out 10-year, I was flat 10 years for a while. I've not ever got out of the positions in Eurodollars because I just saw it and said rate's going to zero and that's it. And I still hold that. I'm just lightening up now because I think the move is somewhat overdone right now. And I think the 10-year yield at about 125 probably hit its key support for now, and it's exhausting. So I think there's a chance of a bounce. I don't know what causes that bounce. Let's wait and see. But I feel the same in equities, and I feel the same in oil, and I feel the same. We start to see it in FX where the dollar started falling, and it's all bouncing off very key levels. My guess is we probably have 3 weeks to a month of sideways chop, and then the whole lot goes in one massive collapse.
And that gets to the point I was making earlier about, I think there's a lot of speculation about, you know, is this the extent of it? From I'm sitting here going, look, I think we just cut a little of the cream off the top of the last 6 months and meteoric pop. We have not priced this virus in. I mean, I don't see that.
No, we've just taken back a couple of months.
Right. Right. But
bonds are pricing in more. I get that. Bonds have been much more accurate in understanding this situation than the equity market has.
Yeah, the psychology out there, especially in the retail space, Raul, I was shocked over the last 3 days. I got zero panic calls. I got multiple calls from people excitedly wanting to move money out of savings to purchase stocks like Tesla. I kid you not. Now I walked.
Well, maybe they're right, Zach. Maybe we're the idiots. They've been right every time since 2009.
Yeah.
So, you know, respect to them.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You know, whatever. We've been wrong for assuming otherwise. However, if I write it all down and give it to a kid and say, this is what's going on, he's not going to say, this is your golden opportunity. Now, again, I could be wrong. Maybe the coronavirus dies out in spring. It's disappeared. It's all gone. Chinese supply chains return. We have, you know, 1.5 quarters of bad numbers and everything. Solves itself and world trade comes roaring back. Good luck. That's not my bet.
No, that's a hard one to predict. So I know that you're a busy man and you've got a lot of things on. Well, and we got a lot of market action that we've got to attend to. But and again, before we leave here, I want to reinforce, guys, go to realvision.com, watch the retirement crisis special, sit down with your spouse at night and just educate yourselves. You don't have to change your whole life around. But one thing we advocate on this show all the time is proper risk management. And we look at the structure of most retirement portfolios, and they couldn't be further from that. They're way too overexposed. What are some activities? We've talked about buying bonds. You know, what are other, you've spoken about activities that you've taken with your own parents. What are important things for investors to know during these times? You know, again, I don't want you to divulge what's in the videos just because it wouldn't do it justice. They need to see the whole thing. Outside of U.S. Treasuries, are we advocating some gold holdings? Are we advocating some cash holdings? Do we think some, you know, long-standing type dividend payers that are value stocks that are extremely undervalued right now because of the disparity between value and growth? What are some things that you think people should be doing?
So I think, listen, if you really want to stay in the equity market, then rotating into value is the right thing to do. I think it will outperform in this scenario. Will it necessarily stay up when the market falls? I'm not sure about, but it is extremely cheap. So there is opportunity, or relatively cheap. It's still not cheap overall because even the value plays are still quite expensive in the US. So that, I think gold is interesting because that gives you a protection against the outsize effects that central banks may have to go to monetary printing, if I'm right, and the world is going to a somewhat more nastier place. I think holding cash is a good idea. I think right now, anything that's in dollars helps. So, you know, some people are happy to trade currencies. And if so, you know, you can trade some currencies by being long the dollar and short, let's say, other countries like the Australia, which gets hit by world trade. But over time, what you'll need to do in a situation like this is get yourself in a front foot, not on the back foot, have some cash, have some treasuries, have a bit of gold, have a bit of value stocks, and then make the decision when we see it. And the opportunity is going to be, going forwards, is probably going to be a 20-year opportunity in emerging markets when the dollar eventually cracks. But I think it's going to get much nastier first, and we have to see probably the Chinese devalue and stuff like that. So I'm a very macro guy, so I look at it that respect. I also think that, as you said, there are products out there, if you're close to retirement, that you should look at that give you some sort of comfort factor in your future income streams. I think that's pretty useful. I also think, just at the simple level, don't try and sell your... If you think, oh, I want to downsize my house in due course, don't think that, because 76 other million people want to downsize their house in due course. So if you want to do it, try and do it now.
Yeah.
And, you know, be ahead of the crowd. Don't follow the crowd, because I'm already, you know, my wife lives in is from New Jersey. Her parents live out in rural New Jersey. There's these beautiful kind of 6-bedroom, 7-bedroom kind of 100-year-old mansion, 3 acres. You can't sell them for anything. Yeah. Nobody wants to live there. The millennials can't afford them. Nobody wants to live in an older community, and there's no bid for these offers. Meanwhile, the millennials who are living in places like Austin can't buy property because they're all outbidding each other, because they're another huge cohort of people all trying to do the same thing. So we've got a really bifurcated property market as well. So I think property is something people need to really realize. The other thing is, if you can stomach your kids, then get them to move in with you. And before you know it, you solve all of your financial problems in one go. And I can't express what a game changer that would be.
That's the European model. I mean, certainly, I've got family in Panama, and that originated from Spain, and that, you know, that's that European model. And I think that we might be seeing that, right, on a macro level here in the United States. That's climbing as we speak.
First time in 100-something years, we're starting to see household size increase again as multi-families get together. Because if you think about it, let's say you're the millennial and you've just got kids, you're in your early 30s, you both have to work, money's tight, property's too expensive to buy. It's like, okay, well, how do we afford, can't afford a babysitter, can't afford to do this and that. It's really difficult. Meanwhile, look at your parents. Your parents have got a house that's a bit too big for them. They don't have enough retirement savings. They can't really work full time because nobody wants them because they're now in their late 60s, early 70s. So they have this issue facing them of, I don't know how long I'm going to live for. How am I going to earn any money? I've got this house that's too big. What do? Can't sell my house. So if you put both together, what you end up with is double the savings. You get somebody to help the two working parents. So somebody to look after the kids and cook, prepare meals and help with the house. You've also got potentially one or both of the grandparents able to do part-time work. So that brings in extra income. And before you know it, you've de-risked everybody all in one go. And so, yes, it's a lifestyle change. But, oh, my God, what a quality of life difference that could bring.
Yeah, sure could. And then in having multi-generations under one roof is not the worst thing. There's a lot of wisdom that can get passed on in family stories. It's not all bad.
Yeah, there's a lot of arguments over dinner as well. Like.
Yeah. That's so true. Okay, now one last thing. Let me squeeze it in here.
Yeah.
I've been a strong dollar guy for a really long time. I know you have, too. I have been a little bit surprised by the dollar's activity through this weakness. It seems to be dropping right along with stocks. Not, nowhere close to the amplitude, of course. But is this just the market building and expectations for rate hikes, or are we seeing something else? Because I will admit I was caught a little off guard. I thought we'd see it cross over the 100 mark on DXY.
No, so what's been going on is, in a panic situation, the euro, the yen, and probably even sterling are starting to see repatriation of flows. So it drives them higher. If you look at the emerging markets like Brazil, South Korea, and others, they've been weakening. So what you've got is countries with surpluses like Europe and Japan, their currency goes up. But as soon as the peak pressure goes off, the currencies start falling again. So they become very difficult to trade because they squeeze higher in these risks off. And then even in a bad economic situation, they dribble down again, and they keep going lower. So the euro got oversold by last week, and so I closed some of those euro shorts. The euro is now bouncing again, and I'll look to re-add them. So I think it's nothing more than that. I think the emerging market play is the better one, but again, we're probably slightly overextended now, so we're going to see a pullback at some point soon, and then we can reset some of this. So I think don't read too much into it. It's capital flows coming sloshing backwards and forwards as these markets puke and money gets repatriated back to Europe or to Japan.
All right, that makes some sense. All right, guys, well, we're going to let you go, Raul, but before we do, I want to just encourage everybody, first of all, on social media, you can follow Raul at Raul, RAOULGMI, and you can go to follow it at Real Vision. And again, I encourage you guys, spend a dollar. We're talking about 99 cents here, a buck. Get access to Real Vision. It's going to be great money. It's something that we have built into our process, and you're listening to some of the brightest minds in finance in the world of investing warning you, right? You're getting a 2007 warning, a 2006 warning about housing, and you're just getting this version of it. At the very least, you're going to get educated and have a better understanding of the risks that are presented to you. So go to realvision.com. Am I leaving anything out, Raul?
No, you've done a stunning job, and I really appreciate your support, as always.
Hey, no problem. It's a blessing for us, and I also enjoy the heck out of it, too. So can't give you guys enough recommendations. Anyway, Raul, we'll let you go. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully as this thing heats up in the coming months, maybe we can get you back on for an update.
Always love to.
All right. Take care, Raul.